Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 95.
This week on the podcast, Denver Bronco fans will need all the weed they can get their hands on after this week's embarrassing Super Bowl whipping by the Seattle Seahawk Pelicans.
And Chris Christie scrawls liar on David Wildstein's locker and gets suspended.
Tuesday's State of the Union inspired a four-headed GOP inequality Godzilla response monster.
And the GOP issues a half-hearted memo promising that they'll totally try to work on immigration this time, guys.
The trio of groundhog weather-predicting experts anticipated six more weeks of winter, 1 week too late to save Atlanta from 2 inches of treacherous snow.
And not even Herman Cain has ruled out running for president in 2016.
Calls to deport Justin Bieber reached a fever pitch amidst Rob Ford's City Hall tickle fight. Canada continues to just be everything.
And rest in peace, Pete Seeger.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out of danger, I'd hammer out of warning, I'd hammer out of love between my brothers and my sisters.
Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the internet at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
And then you can find us on all the social media out there, because that's where...
Where we live.
Not as much as we should. If you're wondering why the music changed this week, it's because, unfortunately, Pete Seeger passed away this week at the age of 94. And I was surprised by how many people out here did not really seem to know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to look at my Facebook wall because it was like all of my friends from home were just blowing out about it. Like there were text messages flying because we all grew up on Pete Seeger.
I was going to say that's sort of like, you know, the New York folk scene. Like that was sort of like his thing. I mean,
yeah. And if you have sort of 60s era hippie parents or anyone in that sort of world, then you grew up going to like Pete Seeger sing-alongs and, you know, going to camps and schools where you just sang Pete Seeger songs nonstop. I've seen him perform like 1 trillion times, which I think is a weird thing for a 30-year-old to have done.
Yeah, it is.
I've met him, too.
Especially considering that he was so old. I mean, for you to have seen him that many... I mean, he's, you know, I mean, you would have had to have been seeing him as he was old as well. I mean,
he
performed
up until very recently.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was his last performance was only like a couple years ago or something.
Yeah.
And he would often perform at events that sort of like progressives in New York were attending. Like we would go to the Abraham Lincoln Brigade reunion every year.
Wow, what
we
is
don't
that?
Have any family members that were in the Abraham Lincoln Brigade. That was the group of volunteers that went to fight Franco in Spain. There was like an American battalion
went.
Okay. It was a volunteer battalion. And so they have a reunion every year where like family members and very old veterans of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade get together and sing folk music together, basically. But we would go, because that's what lefties do.
Yeah,
they go to these events, and Pete Seeger was often there.
Yep,
and
that's what Pete Seeger does.
That's what he does. He used to give a concert once a year at Carnegie Hall as well, with Arlo Guthrie.
Oh, that's cool.
Was the son of his good friend Woody Guthrie, who wrote This Land Is Your Land.
Right.
And they would sing that and other things.
But he wrote so many classic songs.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people probably don't realize that he wrote.
Right, he wrote We Shall Overcome,
which
is, if you have been in the vicinity of, like, children singing, you've probably... heard. Yep. It was a civil rights anthem, it's now a popular choice because it's easy. It's a popular choice for children sing-alongs.
Yeah.
And he was originally a member of this group, The Weavers, that had a number one hit. So even though he wasn't all of that commercial, his early career, he had a number one hit.
And his early career was early, too, because, I mean, he sort of was like a big labor movement person, like all the way back like
into the
40s, like the late 40s. Yeah, I mean, that's
a
long time
a long
ago,
career.
People.
Yeah.
Not
and he actually,
do the math,
I didn't realize he had written Turn, 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 which the Birds performed in the 60s.
Yeah.
But so he had a couple of hits
A Hammer, another classic children's sing-along.
Children are singing If I Had a Hammer, like nobody's business. Because it's a fun song as a child.
Yeah.
You know, and you know the words. If you had a hammer, you can hammer
and
in the morning.
Where Have All the Flowers
the
Gone? When I was first reading this, I was like singing that and humming it, and I was like realized that I was humming "Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?" And I was like, "That's the wrong person." And then I was like, "Oh right, yeah, okay, that's the song." Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Not the same song.
Not the same song.
No.
And he's one of I think the few artists that have sort of spanned the decades that was was blacklisted by McCarthy's, by the House of Un-American Activities Committee. And
probably
he delivered...
one of the few people that was rightly blacklisted by McCarthy, right? I mean, right?
He, his testimony before the committee, though, is genius. Because they keep asking him about his political affiliations, and he keeps telling them that it's not, you know, as an American citizen, he doesn't have to tell them these things. But they keep asking him if he sung these songs, and he won't tell them that he sang them at specific events, but he will admit to singing them, and he keeps offering to sing them. And so they keep being like, did you perform at the festival, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I can't answer that question, but I can sing We Shall Over, you know, like, it drives them crazy. It's nice. It's great testimony. But yeah, That's a dying breed, people that were blacklisted.
Yeah, right.
but he also, more recently, is sort of remembered for spearheading the efforts to clean the Hudson River. Because he raised all this money to launch this ship where just, I guess, it was called the Clearwater, and it was just like a bunch of musicians floating around in the Hudson, like singing about the Hudson River. And it was one of the things that forced GE to clean up the river, which was a big victory of the late 60s, early 70s kind of era. So, and I think for people like us who are progressives and are young and often face a lot of disappointed hippies in in our world, I think he was, you know, I posted about this on Facebook earlier this week as well. He was always very sort of like optimistic about the future. He was someone who didn't put down young, you know, activists and put down young voters, and sort of like always sort of saw good things coming, you know, around the bend. So I feel like that's a good message for us to remember.
Yeah, it is.
And we'll miss him.
Yeah, he'll be missed.
Yeah.
For sure.
And also, Philip Seymour Hoffman died.
We'll be missed.
Which we don't know him as well.
No, we don't.
But
he was only 46.
He was only, it was, died, it was sad.
Today, Sunday. Yeah. And
drug overdose,
which is sad because he'd supposedly been clean for like 20-something years.
Yeah, and
he had kids. He's had a history of drug use. So and he was found in his apartment, I think, apartment.
Yeah, I think it was in his apartment in New York.
So I'm sure we'll be hearing more details about that in the coming days, but that's
a
sad
thing that happens.
I mean, it's always sad when someone dies with a drug overdose, but I mean, you know, obviously a very talented person who's won an Oscar and, you know, he's in a lot of
stuff.
People love him.
Right.
So.
People who are more qualified to speak about him than us.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also the Super Bowl was today.
We just got done watching the Super Bowl.
We just finished watching it.
We had a lot of good food. We had some food that Lila found highly suspect.
Guys. Is it necessary for us to pair every major sporting match with some kind of cheese food?
Yes. Yes.
There were some suspect things on the table.
I tried to get... Well, first off, there was like a run on Velveeta cheese, which I needed. So what did I have to get? I got the Kroger brand. What was it called? Nice and Cheesy.
Nice and Cheesy.
Right? I tried to get Lila to cut it into cubes for
me. Wouldn't touch it.
She wouldn't touch it.
I once got compelled to touch Velveeta by accident because I was trying to be polite at someone's house. And they were, like, making queso, which is, like, this Texan awful food that everyone's making.
Well, that's what I was making.
You were making a variation on queso.
Right.
But so she was like, here, can you just cut this? And, like, handed me a thing of Velveeta.
Yeah,
and
it's like a globby gelatinous.
That was when I learned that it was so gelatinous. I didn't know. I thought it was just a brand of cheddar cheese. That's not right.
That's not right at all. No.
So now I know better than to agree to touch it, because touching it makes me uncomfortable.
We also had little wieners.
Oh god.
Or little smokies.
Little smokies.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was a mixture of barbecue sauce and grape jelly,
which is another classic Midwestern preparation.
I brought crostini,
which was also delicious.
Right.
Yeah.
Made some bruschetta.
Uh-huh.
You know, some
and we had stuffed mushrooms.
Yeah, we had stuffed mushrooms.
And homemade pizza. I mean, it wasn't all
right. I was able to eat. And we had some delicious Sundays.
But the food was the excitement, because that game was a giant disaster.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there was fun things that happened. There were interceptions. There were touchdown.
Those
were
all
kickoff returns. There was a safety at the very beginning of the game.
Still don't know what that is, but I'm going with it.
Yeah. I mean, it was...
It was a great game for someone like me who doesn't really understand football, because I didn't have to understand football to know what was going on for most of the time.
Well, there were a lot of questions.
Only one thing was going on.
There were a lot of questions that you had to ask during this game that you wouldn't have had to ask during most normal football games, because they're not things that happened.
There were a lot of things that I had never seen before.
That was the only thing that was exciting about it, because it was certainly a... I mean, stomping.
It was an eccentric game.
It was an eccentric game, but it was not close.
No.
It wasn't a close game.
It's not a close game.
No.
If you watched the game at any point, you already know who won.
Right.
The team that we renamed the Pelicans.
Lila wrongly thinks their thing on their helmet looks like a pelican.
Yeah.
It doesn't really look like a hawk.
It doesn't
really look like a pelican either.
Or a seahawk, because Don't know what that is.
Well, and they had some sort of Seahawk that was there, and it didn't look at all like what was on their helmet.
It looked like an angry pelican.
All right.
I stand by my,
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Stand by it if you like.
Yeah. But in any case, that was a thing that all of America was doing while eating Velveeta. Mm-hmm. And because of it, we're apparently all getting stupider.
Yes.
Because Noam Chomsky
right. Is
hitting the airwaves.
Uh-huh. And I think he's talked about this before, and this may even be an old quote, but it was sort of like dug up by people again, basically. Right. Because like Noam Chomsky isn't sort of a real big fan of the media in general, but he's definitely not a fan of sports.
Right.
Because he thinks it's basically just a way to make people dumber.
It's so, like, it's a way to appease us so that we don't think about things.
Yeah, so if you were watching the Super Bowl, then what he said, it's pure diversion. There's this real mass media the kinds that are aimed at, Joe Sixpack, that kind.
He doesn't like Joe Sixpack.
The purpose of those media is just to dull people's brains. The main thing is to divert them, to get them to watch the National Football League and to worry about mother with child with six heads or whatever you pick up on the supermarket stands and so on.
Or look at astrology, or get involved in fundamentalist stuff, or something or other.
Right, yes.
He really grouped everything into that.
All of it.
All
right
of
there.
It went into that quote.
But I do feel like
I don't think I got smarter.
I love football, but I did probably got stupider during that game at some point. I had to have.
Well, right? There's just like no influences while you're watching football that encourage you to like think critically.
Well, once it's sort of like getting me to make a dip made of Velveeta.
Right.
I mean, it's already
logical reasoning's gone out the window.
It's out the window.
Yeah.
I wouldn't eat that on any other day.
It compels you. The other thing I feel like it does is it compels you to start rooting for a team based on nothing. Like, I was suddenly like, well, I've decided I'm over the Mannings. Like, I don't know who the Mannings are.
Yeah. Nobody knows who the Mannings are.
No. They're just some guys like whose names I've heard. Like, I picked a team to root for. Like, what was I doing?
Right. Like, picking a sports team to root for is similar, like, to, putting a support our troops. Bumper sticker on our car, basically. It's just sort of like, not that you
didn't do anything to support the troops.
You wouldn't root against the troops, but like, of course, everyone supports the troops.
Right.
So it's just sort of like,
it's just an arbitrary thing.
It's like an arbitrary, dumb thing that we're doing that like, we think means something, but doesn't mean a damn thing.
Exactly. And I think in the case of football and some of these other things that Noam Chomsky is talking about, it's sort of like a money and resources drain.
Right. Well, right.
Because did you learn, as everyone did on Facebook recently, that the NFL is a nonprofit?
Oh, yeah. You told me this.
Yeah. So they don't pay taxes. So you're welcome, America.
I mean, most large corporations who aren't nonprofits aren't paying much taxes anyway either. So,
that's true.
It probably wouldn't matter
probably
if they
wouldn't
were a corporation anyway.
Yeah. And I guess that's the NFL and not the individual teams within the NFL.
Those
can't be nonprofits.
No, not all of them. I mean, the Packers are publicly owned. But
yeah.
I mean, like, they're...
Right. I felt okay supporting the Packers when they were
in the Super Bowl. Yeah, I
usually do. Because that just seemed like an okay thing.
Yeah.
I can get behind a publicly owned something. But in any case, speaking of the Super Bowl...
Yeah.
Speaking of New Jersey, where the Super Bowl took place, although you would never know it based on the shots that they were showing.
It was only New York City.
It was all like Times Square.
Because they're playing where the Giants play, which is a New York team. But
And the Jets.
But they're both New Jersey teams.
Here's why people in New York City don't talk or care about football. It's because there's not any football teams playing in New York City.
Right. Two teams have their name attached to them.
Watch the Mets or the Yankees. You can get on a subway and get to Yankee Stadium or Shea Stadium and be there.
Yeah.
If you want to go watch football, you need a car. And just like, you're not trying to do that, so you just don't do it.
Yeah.
That's a television sport, if anything.
Yeah.
But in any case, there was other great New Jersey news this week because Chris Christie... Still out there on the stands.
Right. Well, he was supposed to be sort of like the king of the Super Bowl, basically, because
Chris
is happening in Jersey.
Walking
so, like,
around trying to be...
There's a lot of the governor of the state that has a Super Bowl sort of, like, gets to do some things, basically.
Yeah.
And he sort of, like, had to do some things this week under sort of, like, this
dark
cloud
of,
like, what we learned this
week.
At
a time that was maybe not the right time to be doing those things.
So, basically, like, during the handoff of... They do, like, this thing where, like, the governor of the state... that's having it, does, like, a handoff to the governor of the state who's doing it the next time. Oh, which is Arizona. I wonder if Jan Brewer was there. I didn't watch the thing or not. But anyway, so he got booed at this event today, which is sort of... Usually he's sort of, like, well enough liked that doesn't have to be the case. But the reason...
Today was special, though.
Today was special because the reason that he's getting booed more so now, on top of just all of the shenanigans of late, is that we found out on Friday from... David Wildstein, that Chris Christie and the administration
dumped
knew
this whole story on.
Right. They knew about the closure. They order the closure, and he basically claims that he like has some semblance of proof that, of such.
That Christy knew these things.
Right, because he resigned at the end of the year last year and sort of has been one of the people...
And ended up taking the brunt
of... Right, he's been one of the people who's taken the fall for it. So he sort of is not going to go down without a fight, it appears.
No. Which adds another layer of New Jersey to what was already such a great New Jersey story. Mm. Because as you know, they are high school friends.
Right, they're chums.
They're high school chums.
They made up a position at the
MTA so that Wildstein could have a job there.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then Chris Christie responded, but part of his response was attacking things that happened in high school.
In high school. He took it way back old school and literally said that in high school, that he was publicly accused by his high school social studies teacher of deceptive behavior.
Wildstein, like, a high school social studies rebel. He did this, by the way, in an email that was titled, Five Things You Should Know About the Bombshell That's Not a Bombshell. Like, things are getting real juvenile real fast.
Very fast. Over there. Yes. He also, of course, like, went the real... Republican route and criticized the New York Times because the New York Times was the one who got the copy of the letter and broke the story, and he of course accused them of sort of blowing it way out of proportion. So I'm sure the conservative right will be all up in his corner to take on the evil New York Times
because
that's a popular thing for people to
do. But maybe they won't want to get involved in the middle of a high school best friend squabble.
I know, right?
Because that's currently what has happened.
Well, and he said a lot of other pretty bad things about him. He also said
that he trashed his record, basically.
Right, he said that he'd been described as tumultuous, and he said that he's someone who has made moves that were not productive.
Yeah.
So, of course,
poor Wildstein, who, by the way, is not the governor, so these things don't...
Right.
He was appointed by Chris Christie, so if Chris Christie knew that he was tumultuous and was making moves that were not productive, it leaves us to wonder why he continued to be employed by him.
And the DNC got all over that and sort of, like, released some sort of statement and were basically like, why did he... promote him to this position that didn't... Like, he basically created a job for his old chum to, like...
Chris Christie is between a rock and a hard place because he wants to dump all the blame on Wildstein. But in order to... In doing that, he only really has himself to blame because he's Wildstein's boss.
Right.
So, at the end of the day, he's responsible regardless of whether or not he knew. But the fact that he did know and has been lying about it this whole time now adds, like, proven liar to this whole chain of crazy events that was already suspect.
Right.
And even if Christie hadn't known, there was a problem because his office was doing stuff that that they shouldn't have been doing. But, like, to have him outright lie to everyone about whether or not he knew, and then to have him go this really petty route of, like, attacking his high school friend and going on about his social studies class in fucking high school, I mean, it's just so genius. I can't even.
Well, and it's sort of like, the only reason this may not be a bombshell is because we probably all just assumed that this was the case.
Yeah, we probably
knew. Anyway, it's so funny because this happened on Friday, and you and Lyle and I went and got some culture. We went to the ballet on Friday night, and we got into the car on the way there on Friday. I was like, can you believe this Chris Christie thing? And immediately after the words coming out of my mouth, I was like, well, yeah.
Yeah, of course again.
Of course. Like, that we've been saying that he knew the entire time. So why are we so shocked by the fact that now we actually know he knows?
Can definitely believe this Chris Christie thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the most believable thing that's happened in this entire
thing. One of the main things that I'm believing.
Thing. Yeah.
Of late.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in what was a less exciting time of the week, the State of the Union happened on Tuesday.
And for once, you watched the major speech that I did not watch.
You may remember, or maybe you don't, that Brent really likes political speeches.
I do love political
speeches. And I really hate them.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, Brent will get really excited about speeches like this, and I'll be like, ugh. That thing.
And we were going to live tweet it, and I knew I was going to have a busy day at work. So Lila took that speech while I was still working, because it came on at 6 here, and I was at work until like 8. And then I watched the many responses, which we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
But anyway,
the most important takeaway from the State of the Union is that in staying late to cover it, I learned that the lights go out automatically at my office at 7 p.m., and I don't know how to turn them back on. So that was one thing that happened.
God, I wish the lights went out in my office at 7 o'clock.
They should do that at your office.
They should do that. It's the only way to get people to leave.
Exactly. But in any case, the State of the Union is always, I think, a sort of, everyone blows out about it, but it's always like a fairly typical speech. Unless something crazy happens, there's not much to report. The big takeaways from this one were mostly that Obama started threatening to issue executive orders instead of going through Congress for things. And he encouraged states to start acting independently instead of waiting for Congress
to
do
stuff. And he did one last week already, I think, just to sort of show that he wasn't kidding
around.
Because
he was gonna...
for federal, I think, for certain...
Federal minimum wage.
Right, he raised it to
$10. He raised the minimum wage for federally employed workers.
Right.
So he talked about how he wants to tackle immigration. Everyone's paying a lot of lip service to immigration. We're going to get to the GOP's immigration plans as well. I still maintain that this probably is not going to happen unless by some miracle of God, like, no one makes a horribly racist comment on the GOP side in between now and 2016. I think as soon as they go full racist, they're not going to be able to go back to this and be taken seriously. Yeah. So I don't know if this will happen, but it's something that he wants to talk about. He kind of chided them for all the Obamacare repeals and was like, guys, like,
what's happening? Stop wasting 40 votes on trying to.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not much attention to gun control, which is the big centerpiece of his speech last year.
Yeah, last year was not too long Newtown.
He casually mentioned Newtown again, and I was like, oh my God. We've now had 2 years in a row of Newtown mentions and have no gun control legislation to show for it.
Well, last year, the greatest part of that speech was, like, that whole sequence where he did the they deserve a vote thing.
Yeah, there was no moment like that in this speech. It was just mostly commentary on who was clapping and who wasn't. And the fact that Michelle Bachmann seemed to be dressed like a mime.
I didn't see her.
It was the most interesting part of the speech for me as a speech hater is when everyone walks in.
Well, yeah.
Because then you get to see who's lining up and who's elbowing who for a spot so that they can shake the president's hand. I love that.
Try and stick her tongue down his throat like she did with George Bush that one time?
She did try to elbow her way to the front, which is curious because a lot of Republicans don't because they're like not really trying to shake his hand on TV.
She's only trying to be seen. What she did not count on was
the neon skirt suit vote. Because there's a whole school of Democratic ladies that wear really loud colors to the State of the Union. You've got Carolyn Maloney. You've got a lot of members of the Democratic Black Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
They go full neon for this event.
Some of them wear good hats, too, don't they?
There was someone there who had a sparkly skirt suit.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, and they were not kidding around. They were going to shake the president's hand. Whatever happened.
Well, and he was way more interested in
seeing them than he wanted to shake their hand. Exactly. So Michelle Bachmann tries to kind of, like, make her way to the front. I wonder if she was dressed as a mime to sort of, like, blend into the scenery so that no one would notice she was up there.
Mm-hmm.
But she just, like, couldn't handle these ladies. They elbowed her out of the way so fast. And then she was sort of, like, looking confused, like, one person back and, like, tried to kind of reach to the president, then couldn't do it. So she tried to reach to Eric Cantor or something. Like, suddenly she was, like, trying to reach to anybody so she didn't look stupid. But it was hard to see her because she was dressed in all black, in, like, a black turtleneck and a black pants or skirt or something. It was a bizarre look for her to go with. She's awful. Well, and she didn't get the memo that you wear neon colors to the State of the Union.
Well, Republican women can't wear neon colors.
No, that's true. I would argue that maybe that's one of the main reasons it's a good idea to be a Democrat as a woman. I'm not trying to wear skirt suits in black.
Clothing options.
Yeah. Like, Carolyn Maloney is not the most tastefully dressed person in the world.
Who cares?
But she's got a wardrobe full of some really exciting colors.
Yeah.
She doesn't kid around.
No.
You know? I can't remember who was wearing the sparkly skirt suit, but whoever that was
needs to be the State of the Union address. Like, blow out.
She should be president. I don't even know who she was.
Yeah.
But she was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
That's, you know, you want to be, you get one moment of glory. And and oftentimes you're just pictured in a giant crowd of people giving standing ovations. Mm-hmm. You want to stand out, you know?
So, yeah. Wear something with sparkles and elbow your way up to the president.
Exactly. The one thing that he did talk about that he talked about last year and sort of slipped in and no one talked about it last year and no one talked about it this year either, but I'm going to talk about it, is that he keeps going on about his love of natural gas. And lest we forget, natural gas is provided thanks to the non-glories of fracking.
Yeah, it comes from fracking.
It comes from fracking. So it's not good for the environment. He makes it sound like it's some sort of environmental cure-all and also some sort of trade cure-all where we can be energy independent. And I get that he wants to stop having to, like, go to war in the Middle East over oil.
Yeah.
Sure. But I don't think that polluting all of our drinking water is the greatest way to do it. And I wish that there was, like, that they would sort of, like, make the connection between, like, what natural gas is and, like, how it's extracted.
Well, this is a thing that, you know, he sort of is, like, because I think his comment was talking about, like, you know, he's in favor of natural gas. I think he said something a lot like if it's safely extracted or something like that. And like saying something like that is sort of like similar to these people who like love clean coal.
Yeah, you know what I
mean? Like clean coal does not exist because coal is dirty.
It's so like you being in favor of guns coal. As long as no one gets shot.
Right, exactly. So it's like there currently does not exist a way to safely extract natural gas without
it's
fracking.
It's a beautiful thought to think that.
Yes, exactly.
I would love it if oil were good for the environment. I'm in favor of oil that's good for the environment.
Like
we all are.
Yeah, calling something clean coal, you can't just start calling things clean gas because that's not a thing.
That's not a thing.
You can't just declare something to be true when it is not true.
Right. That's if we don't have the technology, like, if we don't have the technology to do it, it's not a thing.
Right.
I'm in favor of safe time travel.
Yes.
We can't do it, so it's too bad. Nope. It's an irrelevant point of view.
No.
And I certainly wouldn't want the president to go on about it at the State of the Union. No. But that's essentially what he did.
Yeah, he's talking about science fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
What he's doing, actually.
So that's something that I think that... there was a little bit more response to it this time. He made a bigger point of it last...
Well, like, I think I read... Time, didn't he talk about it for like 4 or 5 minutes?
He talked about it for
something?
A while.
He talked about
last year, it was like one little comment that he snuck in. And right. I was like, oh my God, he's talking about fracking. And everyone missed it. This year, fracking people didn't miss it.
Yeah, no. Last year was
everyone
sort of like,
did.
I think last year he was just generally talking about sort of like an all of the above
he
energy solution.
He was doing
solution,
an energy independence.
And it was just sort of like a, you know, vague sort of like thing that if you blinked, you were like, wait a minute, was he talking about fracking?
Yeah.
This year, he was talking about fracking.
Talking about
he didn't
his
say fracking,
being in but, favor of expanding fracking.
Yeah.
So that was a problem that I had. I was not the only one who had problems with his speech, though.
No, it was not... It wasn't missed this time.
Because there were about 27,000 Republican responses.
Oh my gosh, I know.
There were four.
And I watched. There were four
official responses from various official people.
I watched three of them.
Right.
The fourth one that I did not watch was the Spanish one. And as I said to Lila, I was like, I guarantee you nobody watched that one because Republicans weren't trying to listen to it.
Right.
Certainly.
No. And Spanish speakers didn't have an interest.
No.
They
so,
were
like, the only two people that could have wanted to potentially listen to that had no desire to do so.
Exactly.
So she could have said anything. God
right.
knows what she said.
No, we don't know. I hear that she made a lot of similar points to Kathy McMorris Rogers, who delivered the official GOP response.
Who made no points.
Right, so that would
be
not
the
nothing.
Only one who noticed that she made no points, too. I was watching Bill Maher the other night, and he was like, she sort of, like, brought up all of these plans. Like, she talked about, like, how Obamacare was, like, this terrible thing, and then sort of, like, we Republicans have a plan to lower your healthcare costs and to blah and do whatever, all of these things. And then it's sort of like, and then just sort of like went
didn't
on to her
it.
Next point, which was sort of about, you know, whatever it was about, like her working at McDonald's and being in 4-H. Like, I mean, she didn't, there was no sort of like, it was
there
a
was
lot
no
of,
mention
was
of
a
an
lot
actual
of vagaries.
Yeah.
No, there was nothing.
You'll be happy to know that she has a child with Down syndrome, like every female Republican.
That's terrible. I know. I was tweeting this and, well, I didn't. Tweet
you
about
tweet
that because
this.
I really felt bad about it. And Lyle was like, why didn't you just tweet it? And
like they go on about it so much.
I know.
It's like,
true.
It's not even that, like, I mean, obviously, it's difficult to raise a child with Down syndrome. And it's, you know, it's something that, you know, we should all be supportive of. But we're talking about people that are not in favor of supporting anyone else in any other sort of difficult situation. And the fact that they all keep going on about their kids with Down syndrome.
Right.
Is like, as some sort of, like, anti-choice thing policy, by the way. I mean, it's
well,
always mentioned because it's supposed to be an anti-choice point. And, like, that's not a good anti-choice point.
Right.
That's an insulting anti-choice point.
Well, and she is against abortion rights because, like, they've had... Yeah. The Republicans have had women.
They've had women before,
it's
right.
It's the first time that a woman has done it in a long time. But the two women that they have had do it before, which is, I think,
Susan Collins and
Christy Todd Women are both...
They're both
in favor
pro-choice.
Of, they're both pro-choice.
And they're both fairly moderate. This,
right, exactly.
She's a nutbag.
She sort of didn't really sound like a nutbag. I mean, she sounded sort of like she didn't have any thoughts in her head.
She couldn't
but
have
she
sounded like a nutbag because
she didn't say anything.
Right. She wasn't up to much.
But she did say some, I mean, she had some, oh, I don't know. She was like, the state of our union is in our heart or something. And I was like, she's like, it like went real like
Disney
toward the end, basically. Like
when I started laughing at your Christmas concert? That's the kind of thing that got me laughing.
That's exactly what
that's
it was.
The kind of comment that made me laugh.
Yeah. No, she had
like
a lot
nonsensical
of that.
Comments about love in our, about our hearts.
Yeah.
That'll get me every time.
Yeah.
Then though, of course, Tea Party Express had their own response that they
and
did
I was
online.
And that was streaming live, and I was frantically trying to find it as soon as I got done watching Kathy McMorris Rogers. And so I was like, somehow got directed to the Tea Party Express, and to like even get to watch the video, I was gonna have to give them my information, and I was like,
no,
I will forego watching this and just forget about it. I found it elsewhere. I don't remember, but anyway,
Mike Lee.
I only saw sort of like the last half of it, but he called Obamacare and inequality Godzilla. I think isn't that what he said?
Think about it a lot or a little, doesn't make any sense.
No. It doesn't make any sense.
It's just a comment. It's just words.
But he just sort of like said the things that tea parties said. They were all sort of crazy. You couldn't even really sort of parse it out because it was just sort of like a string of like loon baggery.
But this year was extra special because not only did Mike Lee deliver a response,
right,
but for some unknown reason, Rand Paul also just delivered a personal
response. Rand Paul
response.
Did too. And that I had to watch on his Facebook page, which made me feel really disgusting that I was there. And all of the comments were like, Rand Paul 16, Rand Paul's saving the country. And it was just sort of oh, this is a bleak situation.
Well,
this
no one else was interested in Facebook watching page. It is the issue.
Well, I know. Right. Exactly.
It was that, only him.
Yeah. That was like on his Facebook page and on
And it was
YouTube,
real cheap
think,
looking,
but,
right? It was like,
yeah,
it was
like
coming to us from the 90s.
Yeah. It was like this weird, it looked like he was like in some Senate cave someplace. It was like very like darkly lit. And there was like a Senate sort of like emblem on like the podium that he was standing at and like a flag. But there was like, it looks like it also might have been like a fake set someplace. But it was like, it was very bizarre looking. It was dark and weird. And he, the only thing that surprised me about his, because he has been trying to, as much as he possibly can, being a crazy person, I feel like has been trying to do some sense talking, and I have a feeling it's probably with eyes to 2016. Yeah. But it was really surprising to me that he didn't say anything about the NSA spying situation, because even Obama talked about that in his speech, and Rand Paul is sort
that's
of like
his thing.
That's his thing, and he didn't say anything. Maybe he just thinks that people are over caring about it. I don't know. It was very bizarre. He only talked for 10 minutes, which wasn't very long, and it seems like a little bit of a missed opportunity for him, because he sort of is the best person to shine a light on you know on that, because he's been doing it sort of since the beginning. So I felt like that was an odd choice on his part.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear odd choices were made. In the production of that speech video.
But he just still is always going to have the problem of just looking too crazy.
Yeah, he's got crazy eyes.
You know, there's that whole thing going around about resting bitch face.
Yes.
You know, he sort of like has resting crazy face.
Yeah.
Like he just has...
That's a thing Republicans are having.
It's a lot of thing that Republicans have. And he just has like this look of wackery in his eyes, basically. I mean, he just looks like an insane, crazy person.
Yeah. That's resting crazy face.
That's
a condition. It's like man-child syndrome. It's a condition you can't help.
No,
but
I mean,
it can work against
can do about
you.
It. I feel like he could do something to his hair.
Yes.
I feel like he has a big hair problem with the curls.
There's a lot, yeah.
Like, he could get that under control, probably. Yeah. He can't do anything about his eyes, though.
No. They're crazy regardless.
Yeah.
And they're not genetic, because...
No.
Ron doesn't have them.
No.
He looks
eyebrow wigs.
He's got eyebrow wigs. He's got other situations.
The eyes themselves
just look like normal eyes.
Right.
It's just a guy walking around with eyes. not so with Rand Paul.
No. Uh-uh. Interesting, because he's an eye doctor.
You're right.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. It's hard to remember, because you wouldn't imagine he knows much about science.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Anyway, speaking of the medical community, there was in McMorris Rogers' speech, there was this mention of Bette in Spokane, who was supposed to be this woman who was frustrated because her health insurance when Obamacare kicked in went up like $700
a
month.
Yeah, it was
going to
cost her like zillions of dollars every month or whatever. And here's what I have to say about this, because this is a thing that I'm seeing a lot of people.
Yeah, people are doing this.
People are doing
they're
this.
Finding they're finding the one person who's having this
they're
problem.
They're posting on Facebook a lot of these things. Here's what I'm going to say to you, people, all people, right and left. If somebody says something about their medical bill going up $1 zillion a month, something is up.
Yes.
Okay? You need to do your fact-checking. And even at one point, I think, like, McMorris Rogers' office, like, had to release a statement that they sort of, like, didn't follow up on the facts of this, basically. Because this was just a woman who had, I think, called her office at one point.
Yeah, she wrote a letter.
Told her.
And complained about this.
And complained about it. And so they used it in the speech. She did not know she was going to get used in the speech. Anyway, somebody figured out who it was, ultimately, followed up with her. And she's batshit crazy.
She's a crazy person.
She's
That's
a crazy person. She had one of those junk plans, basically.
Yeah, she had a plan that was $552 a month for catastrophic coverage with a $10,000 deductible and four doctor's visits a year.
So it didn't qualify.
Right.
So her plans got canceled. So what did she do? She didn't get on that, quote, Obama website.
No.
Because she wasn't, God forbid, she wasn't going to do that because... No. She wasn't going to get Obamacare,
no,
even though
didn't.
That's what she's getting.
Right,
anyway.
Right.
So she goes and she calls the insurance company.
Yeah.
What does she think the insurance company is going to do?
They tell her it's going to be $1,200 a month.
They give her the most expensive plan that they could possibly replace it with. She doesn't go on the exchange, which could have saved her hundreds of dollars, like, in refund money, basically. So it's a sham.
It's a sham.
So if you were listening to Kathy McMorris Rogers and you heard about Bette in Spokane, that is all false.
Yeah.
It's all wrong.
Well, and even in her interview, she admitted, because she said at one point, I have a friend, she and I fight about this stuff all the time, and she got a great deal, $129 a month. She knows people are getting deals on the exchanges.
Right. She just won't go on the exchange.
She just refused to go
on
them.
She's not going
to
go on the Obama
against,
website.
Yeah, she's against Obamacare.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
stop yourself, yeah. People.
But this was a thing. Remember that woman or that girl who was, like, just out of college or something, like, who wrote that letter that was, like, Obamacare raped me or something?
Yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
And, like, that was going around? She did the same thing. She didn't want to take government handouts.
Yeah.
She's, like, this libertarian.
Right.
So, basically, like, she talked about how Obamacare was raping her because it was going to cost her...
She was refusing the economic help that was going to help her afford it.
Right, exactly. Like, she wouldn't take any of the...
The subsidies.
Yeah, the subsidies.
The plan is built so that you will take the subsidies if you can't. It doesn't work if you don't take the subsidies.
Right.
Because the insurance is too expensive by itself.
Right. The subsidies are based on what your income level is.
Right.
If you don't make any money and you don't take the subsidies, then you are going to get raped by Obamacare.
That's correct.
That's your own choice. That's not rape.
No. No, that's
you
not rape.
You can't rape the willing.
Exactly.
Okay? That's, like.
It's not the same thing.
No.
This
anyway.
Is the, this is going to keep happening. This is a story that's going to keep. Her, by the way, Bette or Betty or whoever
I
she
can't
is.
I remember.
She's chosen to forego having insurance for the time being. Mm. So she's a real smart plan. I mean, that's not very different than having a plan with a $10,000 deductible, of course.
I know, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know if that's making much of a change.
No.
But.
Saving yourself some money.
Oh, my God.
Front end.
She's not furious, and her old plan was $500 a month, and it.
For nothing?
Was a catastrophic plan. Holy shit. Like, that is bonkers to me. That's some bonkers.
Right.
Some crazy bonkersness.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even have words for it. I've lost my train of thought. In any case, you would think that given that they got a special shout out about this at the State of the Union and everyone knows this has been a massive failure, that the GOP might start thinking this year about not trying to repeal Obamacare 75,000 times.
That's not going to happen.
It's not true. It's not going to happen. No.
No.
They're still committed as ever.
Yeah.
The fact that it's starting to happen and people like it is not going to deter them from getting rid of this popular policy.
No. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they have no plan with which to replace it is also not going to bother them.
No.
They're going to just keep on trucking.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? In what is one of the most hilarious focus groups in the history of the world, and focus groups I say with air quotes,
right.
Sean Hannity assembled what he was referring to as a focus group on Wednesday on Fox News that was really just... a sort of panel of right-wing politicians, like far-right and loon bags, that included Louie Gohmert and Steve King and Michelle
Bachmann.
Blake
Fahrenhold, I don't even know who that is.
Blake Fahrenhold, who's a Texas Republican. They all were asked about about how much they hate healthcare reform, basically.
Yeah.
In one of those questions, it's like, how much do you hate healthcare reform? And then they're like, a lot. I hate it a lot.
They all try and out-hate it.
Yeah, they all tried to out-hate it.
Hate each other.
So they all went around the table and basically talked about how they're as committed as ever to repealing Obamacare. Michelle Bachmann ended on that. She said, I just want to give the American people hope, and there are members of Congress that aren't going to give up. We're going to stay on the repeal train because that's hurting Americans. Well, that's
the
true.
The repeal train is hurting Americans. I'm sure, yeah.
Her words are not good.
Yeah.
We want healthcare to be better, and we want people's lives to be better.
Mm.
I'd argue that's incorrect.
I would, too.
But so if you were worried that Congress... would not spend this year wasting tons of valuable time trying to repeal Obamacare 40 some odd times.
Nope.
Fear
rest,
not. Yeah.
Rest assured.
It's obviously working so well for them that I just say go for it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Repeal up a storm.
Yep.
You guys are just throwing away votes as you do it. And the more people that sign up for Obamacare, the more votes you're going to throw away.
Yeah, I
At
totally
a certain
agree.
Point, you're literally just going to be hemorrhaging votes over this insane
well,
thing.
Right. Well, and that's what I think one of these people, it may have even been Steve King, I can't remember, but basically they were like, you know, once the Democrats realize that they can't run on Obamacare, that's going to be the death knell of the program. But
I think... It's exactly what they're going to run on and it's going to work.
I was going to say, I think that they're sort of tentative about doing so now because it's still sort of like we're coming off some tumultuous times with it. I think that as sort of like things get squared away, which it seems like they already are, that they're going to go for
it. When
that
March deadline goes past and everyone's like, oh, now we all have health insurance and everyone feels great.
And everybody feels great and we've met the 7 million people who they wanted to get signed up for it.
And there's going to start being stories about young people who broke an arm and suddenly were able to afford to get it fixed because of Obama. And there's going to be a million stories like that.
Those are going to start rolling in over the summer, which is well in time to run a campaign going into November
for
a congressional
race. This is everything they're
going
to run on. They have nothing else to run on. They might as well run on
this.
True. They haven't done anything else.
Yeah.
And it's going to work. It's going to be exact. It's going to work even though the House leadership now believes that they're going to get on the immigration train.
Finally.
Not going to happen.
Right.
They released this sort of like plan.
It's a blueprint.
A blueprint, yes. At their annual policy retreat this week, which was a one-page memo. So they put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah.
It was titled Standards for Immigration Reform. And it basically was just about what their sort of like, you know, what their points are going to be on the immigration reform argument and sort of like what their limits are going to be.
Right.
And basically they've created an arbitrary limit. Where they were like, we're not going to pass a plan that includes a special path to citizenship for undocumented people that are already here. So, which is what the Democrats said they absolutely need to have in the plan. So they've already staked out a position that's untenable.
Right. And they also said that they're not even going to think about doing something like that until the nation's borders are secured. Which is the other thing that is sort of like, we probably, you know, we can throw more money at that problem, but like,
how do you decide that it's happened?
What's the trigger?
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, and
when do we know the borders are secure and can move on to other policy?
Yeah.
We don't ever. The
no,
borders
we can't.
Are never going to be secure. Literally, there's not going to be ever a moment in American history or future that the borders are secure.
And they've already said that they're not going to do this comprehensively. They're going to do this piece by piece.
Yeah.
What I have a feeling that they will probably do, if anything, is just as the House, and whether it gets dealt with the Senate or Obama or not, is probably pass some wacko bill to fund like a, you know, giant fence down there and like a zillion border patrol agents or
this
something
is a
like
great
that. And then they'll say, look, we did immigration reform.
This is a great opportunity for the fence building industry to get their lobbies in right now. This memo was basically released so that the fence building industry would know to start lobbying.
Right.
It's a change because they weren't even interested in talking about immigration last year. So, it's a good sign in some senses because it at least opens the door to, like, having a conversation that will show that they're being, like, unreasonable, whereas before they wouldn't even talk about it, you didn't know.
But even the blueprint was sort of, like, panned, and most rank-and-file Republicans are sort of, like,
think it's a joke. The rank-and-file Republicans hate it because they think it's too liberal. It was panned by the left because it's stupid.
Right.
Like, no
the
one...
right, the National Review called it sophomoric.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no one thinks this is a thing. They sort of, like, go on a little bit about, you know, they pay a little lip service to some of the sort of things that Democrats talk about, like figuring out a way to legalize undocumented people, but they never say anywhere in it whether or not there's going to be a path to citizenship at all.
Right.
Even if that's not a special path. Like, they don't talk about that at all. They say that they're willing to talk about having some sort of special path for people that were brought as children, but they won't really talk. They're going to include all of these specific enforcement triggers in the plan so that Obama can't just, like, go over their head and issue executive orders like he's been doing. And most people think that those triggers are going to be too restrictive and there's going to be no way to actually, feasibly fall into the category that you need to fall in to qualify for this.
Yeah.
You know, as a young undocumented person. So it's not clear what they're hoping to accomplish with this plan in particular. And if it doesn't involve citizenship for undocumented people, then, like, what is the point?
Well, that's what...
What's the point of getting a green card if it's not on the way to getting citizenship?
Right.
There's no point. Undocumented people aren't going back unless they're going back. Like, they're not, like, different than other immigrants in that regard.
Yeah.
Like, they're not... You know, if you come here as an undocumented person, you're sort of here for a while. Like, you have no way of getting out.
Yeah.
So you don't have ID. So there's no reason for us to act like we're just going to leave them in limbo forever, you know? That's crazy.
Right, but on top of just sort of, like, all of the problems with just sort of, like, this, you know, blueprint, basically, that's only one page, is that nobody really sort of has any grasp on when they're going to get down to actually doing this. Because they haven't written a plan, and they haven't said when they're going to start working on even sort of, like, fleshing out the blueprint into being a plan to vote on. And sort of they were, sorry, I just almost dropped a bottle of water.
Yeah, that happened.
I can confirm that.
Sorry. But no one seems to know when this is going to actually happen. They have been tamping down on our expectations by saying that they don't trust the president a lot.
Right.
Which, like, is like, about what? Because he enforced that Dream Act thing without them. Like,
no.
Go screw yourselves, guys. Like,
yeah,
deal
seriously.
With it. Like, you weren't willing to deal with an issue that was an actual pressing issue. So, like, you had fucking Dreamers camped out in your office for, like, months and wouldn't do anything
about it.
So, like, deal with yourselves.
But, like, Paul Ryan was, like, on the Sunday shows, and they were asking him about it, and he was sort of, like, basically flat out said he didn't think this was probably going to get
dealt
with.
Which is hilarious because the White House Chief of Staff, Dennis McDonough, is going around saying that he thinks it's going to definitely get done this year.
Exactly.
So no one knows.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Unless there's some exciting fence building involved. And if it's just border security.
Yeah.
You know, I could see it. But this is, they're paying lip service to this because they're worried, because they want to get the Latino vote in 2016, and they think they need to start getting in there early.
This isn't the way to do
it. This is not the right move, no. And this is, as we've said before, the reason this didn't get done before and is not going to get done in the future, it's a no-win proposition for them.
Yeah.
They don't gain anything by actually doing anything on immigration reform. If they do anything helpful to immigrants, they lose their base of wackadoo crazies.
Yep.
If they do anything helpful to the wackadoo crazies, they lose even more of the minority vote and just, like, the thinking person's vote than they already have. So, like, there's no reason for them to act.
It's a problem for them nationally, but it's not a problem for all of these people who are only worried about keeping their jobs every 2 years.
Yeah, right. So. No, that's true. And it's, immigration issues only affect certain states really significantly. Yeah. They affect every state in certain ways, but there are certain states that are more invested in this issue than other states, and those states generally don't elect the kinds of Republicans that have nothing to gain from working on this issue.
Well, right.
So the people that are sort of driving the train on this are from places that don't care.
Yeah.
Steve King doesn't give a shit about immigrants.
No.
Because he represents a random part of Iowa that no one even lives in. And if the people that do live there are not immigrants.
No.
So he doesn't care.
Just
go on, you know, waving to the three white farmers that live in his district. And
that's it.
Can go on with his life. He doesn't need to work on this issue. He doesn't gain anything from doing it.
No.
So when he makes a comment about immigrants with calves the size of cantaloupes.
He gains a lot from that.
He gains a lot from... If he can race bait and do other kinds of, like, horrible, you know, bigoted commenting, then he gains tons from that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, boy. This is a doozy.
Here's some terrible news. We talked before about how much the president now loves fracking.
Yeah.
And one thing the State Department really loves is the Keystone Pipeline, which they issued a report about on Friday.
They finally issued their report. They've had various reports in the past.
There's been a lot of reporting going on about
this. Yeah, exactly. But basically what they said was, have at it.
Yeah, go for it. It's a great idea.
Just get down to it.
So now John Kerry has to issue his comments to the president, and he doesn't know what to do because he's, I think, sort of trying to live in the Al Gore mold of being a somewhat environmentalist, but obviously he's a massive failure at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, I think, you know, no one really knows what to expect from his comments, but he's sort of in a tough spot right now.
Well, he is in a tough spot, and I have a feeling at John Kerry's core, if he has one, he probably doesn't want the Keystone Pipeline.
He probably knows this is
a
bad idea.
He's a, you know, lest we forget, I mean, he was a very liberal senator. I mean, he sort of ended up moderating himself a little bit for a national election, and I think now probably more so sort of in this White House and being a person who has to deal with diplomacy. But I can't imagine that he really wants this to go down on under sort of on his watch, but I mean, who knows?
But he also doesn't want to be the guy that pisses off the oil industry because nobody wants to be that guy.
True.
So that's
he can't. What's he going to do after he stops being Secretary of State?
Like start a foundation and like move
on
with your life.
He has more money than God because of his wife. I mean, like
be a rich old man.
You don't have to do anything for the oil industry. Fuck them.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you're an appointee. You're not elected in that position.
You're an appointee. You have more money than they do anyway.
Right.
The oil people.
You make a good point, Brent. Like, this is all lame duck politics. These people can be like, fuck you to anyone they want.
Anybody.
Like, why won't they just fucking do it?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
But it sort of opens the door for it. It's, you know, people, I think, have often sort of guessed that he was going to give it the okay.
Yeah.
But just sort of hope and pray that he doesn't.
He's not as great on the environment as you want a person to be.
No. And I think that he's going to cave and just say that it's going to be a big jobs thing because he's sort of so obsessed with jobs. But it's a little weird that he hasn't given it the okay already because he keeps pushing. He's been pushing it for years.
They obviously know that it's going to cause a controversy.
That's the one thing that environmentalists are sort of like hanging their hat on is that he hasn't said yes yet, which is what is, I think, making them at least hope that he's maybe going to say no.
Because like, why would, if you're going to do it, the environmental, then just do it. Like, the oil and gas industry is a problem because they have money. And maybe part of the problem is that he, you know, he doesn't want to get the criticism on, you know, from the environmental industry, but he wants to make sure that the oil and gas industry money comes in. There's money concerns here for the Democrats in general. But I'm sort of like, everyone has been accusing him of being ineffective. Everyone's accused him of being too far right.
Yeah.
Like, just say no.
Yeah.
It's so easy to say no. No means no activity. No means nothing.
Yep.
Yes means that something is actively bad. Something actively bad is going to happen.
It's going to happen, right.
No means just like nothing happens.
Yep.
We just continue as we've been continuing on.
Nobody has to be any the wiser.
Yeah. They've already, you know, indicated that the pipeline won't really change the way that oil and the rate at which oil is being extracted from Alaska or wherever anyway.
Right.
But that, I feel like, invites in action anyway.
That's true.
We don't need the pipeline if it's just going to be the same regardless.
Yeah.
Up there. It's,
yeah.
You know.
Canada or wherever the
Canada or Alaska or wherever they are. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
In any case, if you're wondering why you're feeling cold this winter, that's right. That's not even a good... Of course, no. It's still February. Of course you're feeling cold.
Of course you're cold.
But unfortunately, you're going to be feeling cold for a lot longer than you might hope.
Because Punxsutawney Phil
made his prediction, which is a fake prediction that is made by people... By a group of people called the Inner Circle.
Which is just creepy. It just sounds like they're like the...
fuck.
Right. Like the... I don't know. Some sort of...
A secret society.
Secret society.
A Yale secret society.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
You know.
Yeah. But the Inner Circle members wear top hats and tuxedos to the annual Groundhog Day ceremony.
Those are those people that are dressed in those crazy outfits.
Yeah. Those are the people who actually make the decision. Because how would we know whether Punxsutawney Phil
saw his shadow or not?
We don't know.
He's a groundhog. We can't read his mind.
No. So anyway, that's what happens. But he made his prediction. 6 weeks more of winter. Now, the National Climatic Data Center has taken his forecast to the test, and they found that they are
lacking.
Not so great. He has no predictive skills, is what they said.
Yeah.
Quote.
My mom used to always say, because I would always ask her what Groundhog Day, like what the sort of like thing about Groundhog Day was, and she would be like, I think that it's, if he sees his shadow, there's 6 more weeks of winter, or if he doesn't see his shadow, there's still 6 more weeks of winter. Like, every time that it would just be like, regardless of what happens, there's 6 more weeks of winter. And I would be like, why would we be looking for that? And she was always like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because in New York, there's going to be 6 more weeks of winter, regardless of what happens.
But apparently there's a whole team of weather-predicting groundhogs out there.
And how do they get them to be so consistent?
I don't... That's the Inner Circle, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
True.
Maybe do that.
Staten Island
the whole
Chuck, the groundhog that...
Which, first off, Punxsutawney Phil is like... Sounds like a thing. Staten Island Chuck?
Just sounds like a fireman.
Come on.
Right?
That's ridiculous.
He predicted that there would also... He also predicted there would be 6 more weeks of winter. He lives at the Staten Island Zoo, evidently. Mm-hmm. But he also... I think got dropped by Bill de Blasio.
Yeah, he went out there for the photo op. The mayors always go out there for the photo op. And he sort of, like, mishandled him a little bit and literally just, like, plopped him down onto the grade. He dropped him.
Yeah. Possibly because he was wearing really weird thick gloves because a few years ago, Bloomberg got bitten by Staten Island Jack.
You know who should be doing these things? Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich would love it. And
he
he's familiar with animal bites, so he's fine with that.
Yeah, no, he could probably do this very successfully.
I would imagine
He wouldn't be dropping things. He probably wouldn't... Well, I said he probably wouldn't be getting bit.
He would be getting bitten, but he would handle it like a pro.
Yeah, he would just
he's
go on.
He's been bitten before.
He'd love it. I'm sure he's been to the Staten Island, so he probably knows where the groundhogs are at the Staten Island. He wouldn't even need guided there.
He can probably name the other groundhogs at the Staten Island Zoo. Sort of. He probably knows them by name. Like he probably knows the penguin.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah.
Larry.
That's Chuck and Harold over there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. There's another one that does it as well in Atlanta.
We don't know what he thought, but his name is enough to report on. So
this is a groundhog whose name is General Beauregard Lee. It's a very distinguished name for a groundhog. It makes him sound like a Civil War fighter.
It totally does.
Which is just the kind of thing people in Atlanta would be up to, I guess.
Yeah.
But also makes me feel like he might not be a patriot.
Yeah, exactly.
Is this a Confederate groundhog?
Probably.
Because I want no part in that.
Yeah, no, I know.
I'm not in favor.
Yeah.
I just read a book that was like a big Civil War epic, or like a pre-Civil War epic. So I've been thinking a lot about the Civil War of late.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how I get when I get into, when I start reading about wars.
Yeah.
Remember when I read about the Revolutionary War and spent long time hating the British?
You were so mad at that.
I'm having issues with the Confederacy this week. So just to warn everyone.
General Beauregard Lee probably predicted that there'd be like 6 more years of winter for the North, and you know,
a lovely
spring for Atlanta.
Exactly. One thing that he did not successfully predict would be the massive snowstorm that hit Atlanta and the surrounding area
because no one
predicted that. And by massive snowstorm, I do mean that there was 2.5 inches of snow.
I have read a lot about this. I know that a lot of it was ice. I know that it sort of caught them off guard.
People have gotten very offended by the laughing that has been going on in the North about this.
But I just... the laughing everywhere, I guess. Yeah. You grew up in snow. I grew up in snow. I mean, I can't comprehend how you get stuck on a freeway for 26 hours. Like, I know that there were, like, issues. I know there were wrecks. I know there were overturned semis. But, like, I still can't process it. When you look at the video of this, it just looks like miles of parking lot.
I actually... I think, and this, something happened in New York sort of like this, but with much more snow, obviously.
Well, right. That's
but New
the
York,
thing.
Here's the difference. New York City has snowplows, which, you know, even in Washington, D.C., they have this problem where if they get like an inch of snow, everyone panics. And it's not because everyone there isn't from another state where they have snow, basically.
Right.
It's because when you have no snowplows, that snow starts meaning something very different than it means when you have a snowplow and have salt trucks and have...
But it snows in Atlanta.
Right. But it apparently doesn't snow 2.5 inches, enough to sort of pack down. The issue, I think, is that there's sort of like a... There's like a bottlenecking effect that happens where like everyone panicked because they knew that the state wasn't prepared for snow. They all decided to leave work at the same time.
Right, that's what happened.
They were all trying to get home. And then everyone, then there was ice on the freeway, obviously. No one
But at what point do all, you know, thousands and thousands of cars end up in park? That's what I don't, that's where I get
lost.
I
know. It's complicated. It's complicated to figure out.
Okay.
And people were definitely like, did you see those pictures of people like sleeping in a CVS? And like there was a lot of like crazy shit going on there.
And students didn't get home. There were a lot of people, slept in schools.
Yeah. This, I think, the thing that's so sort of like confusing about this is it's so preventable.
I mean,
I get that Atlanta doesn't want to invest in a ton of snowplows. Why would they? It doesn't snow that much, though.
Right.
You know, it's a waste of money.
Could they have known that some snow was coming, I guess?
Oh, my God. There are snowstorms that happen on the East Coast that snowplows definitely can't keep up with. And if
of
you
course.
Don't start preparing for them early, which Bloomberg was often having was often not doing, then the whole city shuts down. The same thing happens anywhere where there's snow.
Right.
If you are prepared for the snow and you really, like, get down and plow the snow. That last big snowstorm that hit New York was no problem, and it was because they got in there and plowed early and everything was fine.
Right.
If you act like you're just not going to deal with it and then the snow happens and everyone is just left to fend for themselves, then, like, the fucking freeway turns into a parking lot because everyone panics at the same time.
Right.
And they're having to sleep in CVS.
That's why I feel like this is not something that would probably, although, well, I guess Bloomberg is sort of...
He's not a Democrat.
He's not a Democrat, but I mean, like, this just
seems
like...
He was elected as a Republican, and he left office as an independent. That is not a Democrat,
I know California doesn't get snow, or at least Los Angeles. I feel like we would be on top of this.
I just don't feel like we would be on top
really?
Of this. I feel like maybe Northern California would be on top of this. I think, though, that there is something different... Like, in a city like Atlanta, where everyone is very car-dependent...
Yeah.
You don't really have other options that can help people get home in a situation like this.
Yeah.
In the case that something like this happens and there's no snowplows. Like, not having snowplows is a really big problem, obviously, because it's not just the snowplows, it's the salt trucks that they don't have. And, like, probably no one there even knows to, like, have salt on hand for, you know, like,
no.
And on the East Coast, you have your own salt. So
or
you can salt
weigh
your
down
driveway.
Your truck or just,
yeah.
like, you know, anything
they don't know
that
how
sort
to
of
use
like
tire
helps you.
They don't know how to use any of the things that you would use to get home in this situation. And I feel like here, I'm thinking about what happens in the rain.
That's true.
It rains, it's a little bit slippery when it first starts raining, and everyone, like, flips the fuck out. And no one is from here.
Yeah.
So all of these are people who come from places where it rains.
Where it rains.
These are all
true.
People who have experience
right now.
Driving the rain. It is raining right now. My drive home is going to be harrowing. It is not because every person I pass is not going to have come from a place where it rains all the time. It's just going to be because everyone's panicking for no reason.
Right.
I think though that this is, like, there's no reason that this needed to happen to Atlanta. There was a way for them to prepare for this if they had literally just, like, thought to. And that's what I think maybe is the difference. Like, I think maybe if they had Democratic leadership who was willing to invest public money in something that may not pan
that's
out.
That's what I think it is, probably.
Then, that, you know, if you're trying to cheap out of a snowstorm in a place that doesn't have snowplows, like, good luck to you.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
not, you know.
Not going to work. Oh, boy. And now it's time for
Hillary Pillory.
So, one of the things that's been going on, and Obama even talked about this in his State of the Union, is there's all of these Democrats in the Senate, basically, who are sort of trying to undermine the president being able to sort of, like, have these talks with Iran. We've sort of loosened some of the sanctions to try and be able to come to the table with them to get them to stop their nuclear program. There's, like, a whole slew of them, Kirsten Gillibrand included,
I
who
know.
Finally backtracked after the State of the Union. I didn't realize she was involved in that. I saw it on HuffPo, and I was like, that can't be right. They had the pictures of the Democrats who had, like, walked it back, and I was like, that's wrong.
What is she doing here?
What?
It's because she's a New York representative.
She's in New York. Yeah, exactly.
You gotta be crazy in the Middle East.
Right, exactly. But anyway, so Obama in his State of the Union basically was just like, don't fuck with me on this, people. So anyway, Carl Levin, who's a senator, he's from Michigan, emailed or sent a letter to Hillary Clinton basically like, as the former Secretary of State, can you sort of offer some guidance on this. I don't know why he just doesn't take the fucking president's advice. He just got to email Hillary Clinton. Regardless, she said something, I mean, sort of surprising in that she said that she feels like...
the president's path is the right path.
The president's path is the right path. Now, I think that that is sort of like very much with an eye to 2016, knowing...
That was her declaration for for her candidacy for president.
Yeah, because... we all know that the reason that she's not currently president is because she voted for the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And I think that
she's a hawk.
She's a hawk. Now, she didn't respond without sort of like at least a sort of talking up her hawkishness.
Right.
Because she did talk about how she, in her 8 years in the Senate, she voted every time there were Iran sanctions. And, you know, she spoke out frequently about the need to confront those threats and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and I think and that's like, the tradition that Kirsten Gillibrand was coming out of, because she took over her seat and
right.
was in this... you know, think yeah. was in the seat where everyone has to be obsessed with protecting right. Israel, and so she kind of took that over. But
I think she's really trying to watch her foreign policiness.
Yeah. Because that shit will lose you the presidency.
It'll at least lose you a Democratic primary.
Yeah.
It might not lose you the presidency, but I mean, it might. I don't know.
If it would lose you a Democratic primary, I think it would lose you the presidency, because it's not the kind... when is the last hawkish Democrat that got elected president?
Right. And nobody's been trying elected? To go I mean, to war all the time.
No,
I mean,
like, nobody's trying to go to war all the time. There's like the people that you need to vote for you in an election, and someone like Hillary Clinton has their eye to the moderates, not to finding new voters on the left. But then there's the people you need to like have campaign for you, and if those people are like, well, I'm not going to campaign for you because you're trying to go to war with everyone,
yeah.
then, you know... you don't get elected president. This is bad policy. It will lose you any part of the presidential yeah. election cycle. Yeah.
Well, she's nothing if not smart most of the time.
Yes, except when she's running for president.
Except when she's running a campaign.
Right.
Very stupidly.
Very stupidly. Other times, she's very intelligent.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, at least we're not in the situation that the GOP is in.
Oh my God, this is... and I had sort of like... heard all of these names that have sort of like been rumored for like to be running for 2016, but basically that there was sort of there was an article this week that I think was in the Washington Post, I want to yeah. say, basically, that was just sort of like talking about how, you know, the Republicans have sort of classically always had like the next person up, or sort of like the most
the
senior
guy whose
person,
turn it was,
or the vice president. It sort of like has been the person who was supposed to get the nomination, yeah. sort of like generally does. Like, it was McCain's second time running. It was Romney's second time yeah. running. It was, you know, or previous vice presidents. You know, it's sort of like, it's always the person who makes the most sense, sort of regardless of whether they're a good candidate or not.
Yes.
As we know, Romney wasn't. Well, so it didn't, but it didn't matter.
No,
it was his turn.
It was his turn. This is why we caution people against the it's my turn plan.
It doesn't
ever work out for the Republicans.
No, exactly. So, but anyway.
It's no one's turn this year.
It's no one's turn this year, and there are at least 15 names. I think the list actually here is longer than 15 names, and that includes basically everyone who ran in 2012.
And
some new people, and even to the point where, I mean, Romney sort of answered a question sort of like hilariously where he was like, no, 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 no. But apparently, like, recently people who have been close to him have saying that he's not closing his options, which is a sort of like,
oh my
wow.
God, definitely close your options.
Close
them right
shut
up.
Shut them down. So,
like, stop lock, having bad ideas.
Lock them, throw away, swallow the key.
Yeah, just don't even.
But anyway, there's,
you know, we have the people like Paul Ryan. We have the people that we know are, think, you know, we right. think someone like Mike Huckabee is
but
probably...
But even Paul Ryan, a lot of people sort running. Of, like, felt like he would just, like, keep his... because he's fairly senior in the House, like, on that committee, like,
right.
that does all the budgets or whatever. So a lot of people have sort of, like, suspected
right,
that he would
might keep
stay
it.
In the House. But he is basically, like, not
hasn't ruled
saying
it out.
That that's the case.
And we know we have the, like, Rand Pauls and Ted Cruz's and Chris yeah. Christie's and...
Marco Rubio.
But there's, like, a whole, like, John Kasich.
Yep.
Thinking about, I mean, that's not surprising, but I would think that given how many people have stepped forward, he's not on the forefront of my mind as someone who should run.
Rick Snyder.
Scott Walker
gets talked about a lot.
Mike Pence. Nobody knows.
He's from Indiana.
Yeah. Rick Perry.
Right.
Again, stop yourself right now. Remember when he was going to be our president?
Yeah.
Remember when Rick Perry was going to be
our
president?
He was going to save the party from that terrible primary that was going on.
And then remember when also Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Herman Cain were going to be our presidents?
Right.
They're also thinking about maybe running.
Even Herman Cain, who like went into like a scandal, like that was
went he, out in a blaze of scandal.
A scandal.
Not
he
ruling
has,
it out.
He has recently said, "I would never say never."
Yeah.
I mean, all of these people are thinking about running again.
And that doesn't include. I mean, there's always Donald Trump.
Yeah,
but that doesn't.
Oh, and
include,
he has specifically said within the last couple of weeks that he's thinking about it.
But he's just a rando. He's not
right.
going to actually win. But that doesn't include. I mean, we've got Jeb Bush. Yes. Peter King from New York, who has sort of spearheaded the anti-shutdown caucus in the Republican Party.
And he's very much hinted at
it. He's very much hinted at it. Yeah, that's not far-fetched at all. John Bolton, who was the UN ambassador. Ben Carson, who's that guy who gave that big speech at the prayer breakfast last year. Became like this big sort of conservative.
Now he's doing like the conservative talk.
Yeah, he's doing the circuit.
Basically, yeah, he's doing the circuit.
But Bobby Jindal.
Yep.
Never rule him out.
It's basically all
people. Everyone who's a Republican.
Could be running for president.
Anyway.
That is genius.
Oh my God.
That is what you want.
That is exactly what
you want. You want all of those people to
run for president.
That is
what we had last year.
It's basically what we had.
Or last time. And apparently they haven't learned much from it.
Right.
This is everything.
And they're already trying to compact things. Can you imagine if there's 30 people running trying to get it over as fast as possible?
It's going to be the greatest thing that ever happened to the Republican Party. Slash the worst.
You could end up with a John Bolton candidacy for president. I mean, like, that is...
Oh, my God.
That is it.
Let's hope that Newt Gingrich ends up being the candidate.
I mean,
that will be genius.
That's a dream.
I mean, so many of these people are a dream. There's nothing but dreams listed here.
Yeah.
It's a really impressive list.
Yeah. Sure.
So,
is.
Basically, now the parties have, like, switched strategies.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that the Democrats would just have, like, random people running, and they would sort of whittle it down as it went on.
We had Dennis Kucinich. We had Carol Moseley.
Remember when Howard Dean was going to be the president?
Thinks that he might be again. He's another person that is acting like he might run
talking
in 2016.
About. But this is the first time that we've had so much momentum so early for a quote
for
inevitable
candidate. Right, exactly.
And generally, the Republican Party has a lot of momentum for an inevitable candidate, and they have a bunch of wackadoos who are sort of like skirting around the sides.
Right.
Not so this time.
Year. Yeah.
It's not going to work out for anyone.
Really confused.
Really confused. I hope we can get off of our high horse about our own, you know, presidential. Inevitableness.
Right.
Because that's not a good idea, as they've proven time and again.
Yeah.
But God, can you think about the exciting primary season that we might be in store for?
What a treat.
on every side of it, it's going to be just like the greatest primary season in modern history.
Well, it's always great when you're running after 8 years, because then sort of...
Yeah, it's just like any...
It's a free-for-all.
Random people just arriving. I mean, yeah, running after 8 years is how someone like Barack Obama just appears on the scene.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is why someone like Hillary Clinton should be kind of nervous about her inevitableness because it was I guess her turn, you know, quote unquote.
Sort of, yeah. For reasons that I can't explain.
If we're a monarchy that gets dynasties, then yes, it was her turn. Meanwhile, the Super Bowl is over. It's in the next week. We're gonna go full Olympics
we're getting
meltdown mode.
Ever so closer to the Olympics. Yeah. I can hardly even. I saw Evan Lysacek this week. Did I tell
you? Oh yeah, you did.
Yeah, I was over at the. I was at the E building, which is across the street from where my office was, because I was eating lunch over there, and he was wandering through there. Michelle Obama was there earlier this week too. She did an interview with Ryan Seacrest.
That's random.
Anyway, that got me really excited.
Yeah,
he's not even at the Olympics this year.
Doesn't matter.
Just his presence.
He's a person who's an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
And we're people who are fans of Olympians.
Yeah.
So that's going to, we're probably going to go back to our Olympics music.
We'll have to.
Because.
We might.
Remember when we did the Summer Olympics and we just spent whole podcasts going on about the Olympics? If you don't care about the Olympics.
Shut us down for a couple weeks.
For a couple weeks.
Don't.
Don't do that at all.
Who doesn't care about the Olympics?
No, you have to be a heartless.
What people are not caring about the Olympics?
Yeah, you'd have to be heartless.
God.
It's heartless
human. If you don't like the Olympics, just stop listening anyway.
Right.
I don't want
your support. But this Olympics is one of the more interesting potential debacles, because every time that there's an Olympics anywhere, really, everyone panics about everything not being ready in time, and it's costing too much money, and whatever host country they settled on is totally inefficient. Russia sort of like is a standard setter in this regard.
Yeah.
And journalists have already started arriving in Sochi, but many of them now have no place to stay because a lot of the hotels aren't done.
Right. Only 6 of the 9 hotels that the press is supposed to be staying at are done.
Yeah.
And some of them have already arrived. The majority of them arriving tomorrow, and
the hotels aren't going to be done.
They don't have place to stay. The IOC is flipping the fuck out on the Russian Olympic organizers because they're like, hello? Yeah. Like, what do you want
this
to do?
This is the most expensive Olympics
like,
on record.
Right, which is crazy because it shouldn't be. The Winter Olympics do not have as many athletes. They don't have as many events.
Right.
There is zero reason that it should cost this money. It's costed more than the China Olympics, which, if you remember,
was a big boondoggle.
Like,
that was
wacko.
Just,
I mean, crazy. Just, like, the most biggest epic event
I suggested to Brent earlier today that maybe we should just give China all of the future Olympics.
Yeah.
Because they can put on a show.
Or at least communist countries.
A communist
for
country.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because they just love that
not
sort of like
communist countries.
Not ex, no.
They're not the right people to do it with.
No.
No, because I was even saying, I was like, I know that this would be a big controversy, but you know who could put on an Olympics is North Korea.
Big time.
They can because, put on, they put on their own versions of the opening ceremonies right. once a year for themselves. There's no one even watching.
And they're big and they're epic. And
they put on a great show.
The thing about communist countries doing this, or at least oppressive communist countries,
right.
is that they can throw a big event like this and not have to care about whether their people are starving or yeah. have power or electricity. Yeah. And that's just, really, that's what you want in your Olympics.
That's what
as
you're
terrible
looking
for. As that sounds. As a viewer, that's what you want. As a human, that's maybe not so
that's
great.
That's not what you want.
But, if you
but
are
you know
turning
what, as a human, this isn't what you want either.
No, it's not.
You don't want a kickbacks-driven no. you know, construction industry where the most expensive Olympics in history doesn't have any hotel rooms done.
Right,
and
exactly.
is potentially going to murder all the gay athletes.
$51
billion. At the Winter Olympics right. where figure skating is performed.
Well, right, well, and that, exactly. Well, and the thing about the Winter Olympics is sort of like, you know, the Summer Olympics are often sort of, like, just at more desirable locations.
Yeah.
And sort of, I read a quote, like, in this article, basically, like, talking about, like, how much money had been spent. And sort of, it was either, I can't remember if it was Putin or who it was, but it was basically, like, you know, we're trying to, like, make sure that Sochi is going to be, like, a destination, you know, for, like, tourism for, like, years to come or whatever. Sort of, like, you know, the next Olympics are in Rio. If you are faced with two choices
yeah.
for a vacation to go to Rio... Or to go to
Sochi, Russia.
You are not going to Sochi, Russia.
No. Nope.
It's just not a thing that you're doing.
You're not doing that.
No, you're not doing that.
And if you are planning to visit a Winter Olympics location of any sort.
It's also not going to be Sochi, Russia.
Right. There's so many other better options.
Way better.
Nagano. Better option.
Yeah.
Immediately. Yep. I already could think of one. Uh-huh. And that doesn't, I mean.
Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City is a better option.
Sake.
And, like, and that's,
because you don't have to be in
Russia.
That's
not a good option.
No.
That's a terrible place to go, but also a better option than going to Sochi.
Yeah, exactly.
So. This is a little bit far-fetched.
Yeah,
anyway.
Vancouver, I hear, is lovely.
Yeah, Vancouver, right. We, I know, we need to go to Vancouver. It's
yeah,
like,
it's
what
so
are we
close.
Doing not going to Vancouver? It's right here.
Yeah.
But in any case, we just named three better options off the top of our head.
Right.
That are all places that you could go instead of Sochi, Russia, to go to a Winter Olympics compound.
So to spend $51 billion on an Olympics that doesn't even have hotels seems...
Suspect.
Suspect.
In a country... And it's been nothing but controversy left,
oh,
right,
yeah,
and center.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Now nobody's going because they're afraid of terrorism, they hate gays, like... What is going on there?
No.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of Canada, we mentioned Vancouver
we
earlier.
Did. Yeah.
The Rob Ford saga is not over. It's still playing out.
No.
It's a different saga. It's just his own saga continues because he's still alive and kicking.
He is just continues to be great.
He's
Canada
amazing.
Is mysteriously
like
just
super
becoming far
entertaining
more
entertaining right now.
Who would have ever thought?
Nobody.
In the world's most boring country.
Yeah, nobody would have thought that. In fact, that was a sort of claim to fame for Canada for a long time. Because
yeah.
while we were being super exciting and going to war with everyone.
Yeah, that was their calling card.
Yeah, everyone was pining away for the days of our Canadian-like existence. Where
yeah.
we just got to hang out and not worry about terrorism all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Canada's
this week,
got other issues.
Yeah, Rob Ford got a jaywalking ticket this week, which is just... So funny. Like, I mean, it's not, you know, funny in the scope of things that are super hilarious.
No, but
like,
he was
just
in
like,
Vancouver.
He was in Vancouver.
Which
oh,
is,
there's our
yeah,
there's segue.
There's our segue. He was in
but,
Vancouver.
Like,
just...
The Royal Mounted Police
yeah.
ticketed him. He claims that they ticketed him because they were, like, searching him out as if
yeah,
they knew
they
that
went
he
out of their
watch.
Way to ticket him.
Right. But, like, jaywalking? I mean, like, this... He sort of can't catch a break, which... He doesn't deserve one,
no.
so it's fine.
He's
but,
actively
I mean,
seeking out non-breaks.
He totally is. Yeah.
There was also this year, or this week, footage released of him being tickled
right.
at a city hall meeting by
yeah,
the
by
chief budget officer.
And
no reason for that.
No,
just
it's hilarious.
Just
and it's weird because the guy
just
is like
him being tickled.
Right, and the guy is like a little guy, and Rob Ford is a big guy, and he's like leaned up against a wall, and this guy is like tickling his stomach. It's really weird. It's crazy.
Everything.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen
okay.
the whole thing. I've only seen
like the GIF of it.
Yeah,
like where it's
I've
just
only
like
seen
that.
The GIF of it.
Well, that's the that's all you need.
Okay.
Yeah,
and that every it's like the GIFs of him dancing.
Oh,
at the
yeah.
city hall meetings, I mean, he's mm-hmm. up to so much.
Right.
So
well,
much
and there
great
was like
stuff.
Video of him recently, like at a fast food restaurant where he was like talking, like,
yes.
he was remember? I don't even think we
he was talking.
Reported
it was,
on
he used
that.
His reggae but... voice, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
Talking I mean, like a Rastafarian
just,
or something.
He's
everything he's up to is hilarious.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not maybe the greatest claim to fame for Canada, but at least they have one now.
No, well, right, because their other claim to fame,
yeah.
is Justin Bieber.
Exactly.
And in final news, the White House, so at whitehouse.gov, you can put a petition up there, and any petition that gets 100,000 signatures has to be responded to by the White House.
Right.
So there was a, after Justin Bieber's
DUI,
his drag race debacle, there was
a petition that went up to deport him.
And it got 100,000 signatures, to deport him, and it got 100,000 signatures.
Quite easily, I might add.
Like, that day, I think, basically.
So now the White House is saying that their response is coming soon.
Right. And NBC News asked him, asked Jay Carney at a White House press briefing, which I think is sort of hilarious, but also, like, don't be doing that.
That's not news.
Like, there are things happening in the world, okay? That are not Justin Bieber
getting deported. Iran has a nuclear program. A lot's going on.
Things are happening.
The Olympics are about to happen.
Right.
Justin Bieber's DUI doesn't deserve that kind of...
But they are... But he did say that the response will be coming relatively soon, and he referred questions about Bieber's visa to the Homeland Security Department. So... everybody's getting involved.
Serious shit.
It really is.
Figuring out whether or not to deport a national embarrassment like Justin Bieber is important business.
I wonder if Canada wants him back.
Probably not. Well, he's also, and I don't get the impression that Canada is chock full of these people. He's like from like an evangelical nut family.
Right.
So.
It's so funny. I was, Miley Cyrus was on one of the late night shows this week because she had her Unplugged this week, which I watched, which was fairly amazing, and I'm not a huge Miley Cyrus, at least music fan. Mm-hmm. But they asked her, like, if she had any advice for Justin Bieber or whatever.
Yeah.
And she sort of, like, was, like, made some sort of, like, a few snide remarks sort of or whatever. And, like, and then I think it was Jimmy Fallon or whatever was, like, but, you know, you're sort of, like, mired in controversy, too, or whatever. And she was like, yeah, isn't that weird that I'm the one who sort of, like, gets talked about the most, and I'm the only one without a mugshot?
Oh, and I was like, Miley!
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
You know?
That's fair enough.
She probably has deserved one on many occasions. Yeah. But, I mean, she doesn't have one.
She didn't get caught.
Nope.
That's like, it. That's half the battle. Mr.
Well,
Bieber.
That's sort of what she said. She was like, doesn't he have enough money to, like, not be having to deal with this?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is sort of a ridiculous notion, but on some level is also true. I mean, like, you shouldn't have to be, like, you know, go drag race, buy a drag race.
Right.
Or something. I mean, it's just sort of like, legally, you know, somewhere. Like,
buy a track.
You don't have to be going 50 in a 30 zone. You know?
You can obey the speed limit. You can afford it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God. Miley, so in any case, check us out next week when we will start into our Olympic coverage.
Yes.
We are so excited. Short programs for figure skating are starting around, like, just at the start of the Olympics. The men's short program, I think, is before the opening ceremony.
Really?
Yeah.
Usually, I thought those were usually on the middle weekend, because that's sort of like after they've had like a big build-up.
Well, that's
what
the long programs are going
to
be then.
They're that far apart from each other? Aren't they usually only a couple days?
I don't know.
I mean, I believe you. I'm not doubting you.
No.
It just seems like an odd schedule.
It seems like an odd schedule.
Yeah.
But in any case, we're going to be on it.
Yeah.
We're going to have the important highlights for you.
All of them.
All of them.
We will know every single
thing that's
happened.
We will literally know every single thing that's happened, including in sports that we don't care about, like curling.
We don't even know what they are.
We don't know what curling is. But we'll know about it. We're going to know about the uniforms.
We're going to know about uniforms.
Curling pants are a big thing.
We're going to have medal counts. We're going to have
all of
it
for you. Yeah.
We might not have any political news.
No.
So just
hopefully there is
yourself.
None, because we are going to have a lot to get through with all of our Olympics coverage.
Yeah, exactly.
So be prepared for that. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.